Learn to trust the power of love. Sandwich. I remember the upstairs hallway where I was sitting. I looked at the woodwork of the stairs and thought it would hold the rope. I also knew that I would not do anything to die, even though I did not want to go on. I looked in a phone book for a helpline. I called in and talked to a man. He said I could meet him for coffee and that I did not have to say anything, but if I wanted to, I could. I went to see him and tried to keep my sadness inside. I drank a cup of coffee and was glad I wasn't at home where the walls were closing in on me. The man told me about the meetings he went to and asked if I wanted to join him. I wanted to. I didn't want to be alone. Before the meeting, we went to his house. He understood, or maybe I told him, that I had not eaten in a few days. He made me a sandwich. That impressed me. I had done things against my conscience. I had lied, I had manipulated, and worse, I had used violence. I wasn't worth it, and still that man was there for me. He took me to my first meeting. I don't remember what was said, even though several people spoke to me. I know I cried. I remember the warmth I felt when I was with those people. I felt I shared something with them. I felt I belonged, that I belonged to them. I never felt anything like that. I'd always felt different with everybody, even my family. We lived in a village, but we weren't born there, and the people spoke a strange dialect. I went to a different school than the kids from the block. I did not have real friends, and my older brother died when I was in elementary school. My parents were always fighting, and I was ashamed. I often fled the house with my mother. After a few hours, my father would find us and bring us back. When I was young, I learned that for adults, yelling, fighting, using, and running away were normal ways to deal with problems. I was a smart and sensitive boy with an unsafe start in life. That feeling of belonging I had at that first meeting was therefore so important. It made certain that I kept coming back. It was hard to stay clean those first weeks. Each day seemed to go on endlessly until the next meeting. When I stopped using, it was as if I had been in a deep, dark cave for years, and suddenly I stood in full sunlight. My eyes had to adjust to light that sometimes hurt terribly. Everything, good and bad, became more intense. Living without anesthesia, I did not understand the feelings that would suddenly surface. Sometimes I thought I was going crazy. I could be immensely sad without reason, sometimes for days. Other addicts who remembered their own struggle assured me that everything would be fine. I did not have to understand everything immediately. There would always be someone to fall back on. I was safe. I kept coming back and it got easier. The obsession disappeared. When I was first going to meetings, I thought my problem was a recent development. I had been having a toxic relationship with a man I thought I loved. I completely effaced myself and thought that was love. The fights when we used could spin out of control so badly that we would go at each other with full wine bottles. But as I opened my eyes to my own reality, I started to see that my problem dated much further back. I remembered when the alcohol came out of my pores the week of my mother's funeral, even though I was only 20. I remembered that I had had fights in bars before, that relationships had ended before, that I had wanted to die before and had made pathetic attempts to do so. I had been in situations before where people wanted to kill me. This wasn't the first time I had been through any of this, but I always tried to find my salvation in drugs, obsessive sex, relationships, smoking, etc. I had been fleeing into addictive behavior for a long, long time. And they provided me with a safe environment in which I could say anything and share everything. This security enabled me to look beyond the last couple of years to see patterns that had been there for decades. When things got out of hand, I always thought that it was the result of some outside force. I was intelligent. I still had my house and a job. It could not be that bad. If only people would see me for what I was worth. If only I lived or worked somewhere else, If only the weather were nicer. If only there had been no military service. If only my brother had lived or my mother. If only I was not addicted. I had my reasons. I was a victim. I learned to recognize my feelings. I learned to recognize feelings. The safe environment of NA gave me the chance to face my own fear. My fear was deep and deeply hidden. Fear that I wouldn't amount to anything. Fear of being deserted, fear of emptiness. I couldn't fight this fear by myself. I couldn't even name it. Old feelings of emptiness and loneliness can still take hold of me. But NA's 12 steps and the people in the program, who I love so much, have shown me another way. The security and solidarity that I get from the program gave me room to breathe. It gave me freedom of choice. I don't have to respond to situations the way I did before. At first, I did not like the word God. It made me think of people and institutions that judge others, like churches that would ban me because I am gay. It frightened me. I was afraid I would not fit into a 12-step program. I share this at meetings. I talk to other addicts and learn that spirituality is something personal. What matters is my understanding of God, not anyone else's. With their help, I learn to trust the power of love that is much bigger than me. When I told my father I was an addict, he told me that his father had died from addiction. My grandfather was apparently not the bohemian from the family stories. He was an addict. As a young boy, my father had to go to the pub to beg him for money for the household. That man died from alcohol after he left his wife and kids in poverty. Out of shame, my father had never told that to anyone. Learning his secret gave me more compassion for my father and more compassion for myself. I have a disease that has occurred in my family several times. I did not choose to be addicted. I am unable to take the disease away. And other people, whether or not they are addicts, have their stories. Beginning to see how powerless I am and getting more understanding from the powerlessness of others allowed me to breathe again and has given me the space to find more good in myself and others. When my father died, I was able to be there for his widow and others as a mature man who could be a support. I don't have to approve of what I have done or what others did. But I get more and more freedom to untangle myself from a negative past, negative behavior, and negative thoughts. This has made my life extremely more beautiful. I don't have to be overwhelmed by feelings anymore. It's easier for me to let go. I'm able to make more room between my feelings, my thoughts, and my behavior, room that is necessary to choose. I don't always succeed in making the right choices. I still have my dramas and my panic. I'm a human being and not perfect, but I can see a lot of progress and I'm very grateful. I am blessed. I'm in a happy relationship in which I learn healthy ways to deal with confrontation. I have friends. I'm able to give love and receive love. I'm an addict. That is no longer a handicap, but a drive to shape my life in a positive way. So much has changed since the day when I wanted to die, and that man showed me I was worth caring about. I didn't even feel worthy of the sandwich he made, but I did feel like I belonged in NA, and I do. It is important for me to remain watchful. The disease is here and will remain, so my recovery should continue as well. I learn more and more to trust the endless love and power that lie in the spirituality of the program. I am no longer a victim of others or myself. I don't have to use anymore, no matter what happens. I'm responsible for my recovery. If I fall back into an old feeling of self-pity, then I have the means to deal with it. I am not alone. I have people to support me when I ask for it. When I have a moment of despair, there will always be someone to talk to. It's not always going well, but it's always getting better.
Okay, at this time, the author, Franz, from the Netherlands, will be sharing with us.
Good evening, everybody, and good afternoon. I'm a grateful recovering addict, and I'm called Franz. And It's a strange thing to hear the story. I'm a bit, I don't know. I have to find my bearings a bit. And I feel a lot of compassion with myself. At the moment, I'm in a difficult situation at work and stuff like that. And if I read this story, I recognize myself as this 20 years younger person, and I'm still that person. And I'm still the 16-year-old who was on a weekday was fetched from the pub by his father, or the 8-year-old who stopped his mother from committing suicide. I'm still that person. I'm still that person. But I'm in recovery. So although I'm pretty vulnerable, I have an enormous strength too. And that is because I had the audacity to call for help, like in this story when I called this helpline and this person said, come over and have a coffee with me. That was not my normal thing to do, to call for help. But I was so desperate that I did. And on this first day, I learned everything that I needed to know about recovery, although I wasn't aware of it. The fact that this person was there, and he was there for me and took me in, even gave me something to eat and took me to my first meeting. And at the meeting, the sense of belonging that I felt for the first time in my life, that was everything I needed to know about the fellowship. And I wasn't aware of it. Later, and even later than this story, in this story, I talk about God, how I had difficulties with this language of NA. And I found a way because I'm still here. But let me tell you another story. And it's about step two, three, and four. A bit later than this story, I started on my step four. I had a sponsor when we went through step two and three, but I couldn't do anything really with step two and three. I couldn't find any refuge in it because of the language. And my sponsor couldn't really help me with it. We read it and we laughed about it, old-fashioned language, and we couldn't do anything. And I didn't find any refuge in. And then I started step four. I started writing. And if you just heard a bit about my youth. And I started writing about my youth. And I actually miss hours in this day that I started writing. I started writing, and the next thing I know is like 6 hours, maybe 8 hours later, I don't really know, but something like that. Lying on the floor, waking up, and I don't know what happened in between my first attempt to write step four and that. Sounds very dramatic, but it was like that. Because I knew, like in step one, yeah, that's step one, and serious stuff. And I was going to fix myself by writing this step four, like everything I'd done bad and everything that I just opened the box of Pandora and I crashed. And I couldn't work anymore. I had a job, I couldn't work anymore. I tried to find professional help. I couldn't find that. Either it was too expensive or there was a waiting list or something. Luckily, and that's what saved me again was that I remembered my first meeting. I remembered that what I felt, the belonging, and how they saved me. So I made a pledge to myself, like to connect. I made a pledge to myself to call someone every day on the telephone, to meet someone every day for a cup of coffee or just chit-chat, talk, and to go to a meeting, obviously. And I remember that I was crying in my car or crying on my motorcycle to the meeting in the first part, probably the first month or so. But it worked. Just connecting to my fellows, to you, worked. That pulled me out of this trauma again. I could, and then I found a new sponsor and I could work step 4 and 5. What I learned from that is, I'm always very cautious how to say this, because I don't want to preach or something. But in my experience, the language of step 2 and 3 weren't innocent. I couldn't find refuge in this step 2 and 3 because the language was put in a way I could work with it. I don't believe in God. I don't have to anything with a higher power. The question in step 2 for me is not the right question. Who or what is my higher power? The question for me is, who or what gives me power? And what gives me power is love and connection. And that's what I find also in the traditions. I love the traditions. And anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions. Tradition 12, you know that. And anonymity I take literally. Like it's no name, anonoma, it's Greek. Don't put a name on it. Don't label over the people. Don't put people in boxes. That's the way we say. And that's, in fact, the spirituality that I found in the fellowship. The spirituality of unconditional love. The men and the other, sorry. The man on the telephone of the helpline gave me unconditional love. He gave me a sandwich, but that was unconditional love. The people in my first meeting didn't know me. They gave me unconditional love. I need that. And I can find that in NA. And that is what saved my life. I stayed in NA after my eyes opened up and my brain started working and I heard the language. I stayed in NA because I felt that love, but also because I was too afraid to go. I was too afraid to go out. But the language almost drove me out. I made it my life's work to do something about it. And I became a spiritual care counselor, a very atheist one. But I became a spiritual care counselor in 12-step facility just to help people translate it into the whole magical thinking bit into love. Just love. The love of the fellowship. The love of this person who gave me a sandwich. The love of people in the first meeting. And I really hope that we can find a way that no one has to go out of the fellowship because they don't find refuge. I was lucky because I was afraid. But it shouldn't be lucky. I should. And I'm grateful. Don't get me wrong. I know the fellowship is about love. I experienced it. But I also say this for all the other Frances who might otherwise, who I want to say, like, we're there. Don't be afraid of the language. Just come in, open your mouth. We're there. Just go for the love and leave the rest. And the steps are still worth it. Steps are still worth it. You don't need it to believe in a God to work the steps. Not at all. I'm in a very difficult situation at the moment. I lost my job as spiritual care counselor, not because of me, but because of the new management of the facility doesn't really believe in 12 steps anymore. So there goes my job. But it'll be all right. Because jobs may be temporary, we will be staying. And I'll find another way of loving people who need the love and who want to stay in and who want to feel something of unconditional love. I will still do that like you do. Because I think it's my life's work, but I think it's the life's work of our fellowship. Thank you.